Hi, Jesuitical listeners. This is Oga here in the studio by herself. Just wanted to let you guys know we experienced some technical difficulties. So if it's your first time listening, you really have nothing to compare it to. So just listen regardless. But if you want to get a better sense of how we sound, listen to a previous episode. Last week, we interviewed Father James Martin. And this week, we've got a great episode with Simca Fisher. So stay tuned.
Hello, and welcome to Jesuitical, a new podcast from the perpetually young, increasingly hip, and mostly lay editors of American media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I am Ashley McKinless, and I'm joined by Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
And Zach Prosciutti.
I'm back!
Welcome back. You're filling in for Zach Davis, who is still in China.
Still in China. Zach, we miss him. Come back.
We miss you.
What are you doing?
Oh, thanks a lot.
I mean, we're excited you're here, but we miss Zach. He's 13 hours ahead of us, so we can't even, 12. Oh, 12, yeah. Can't even talk to him.
Yeah, but...
And he's where?
He is in China. He was in Beijing. Now he's in some small village shooting a short doc with our film guide, Jeremy Zippel. So that's something to look forward to. But we are happy to have Jesuit Zach back. Zach with an H. Zach P.
I'm happy to be here.
P something. what's on tap, Zach?
Well, we have this very delicious monastic Belgian beer that was generously sent to us by Stephen Grant.
Yes, Stephen Grant. He sent these a couple of weeks ago, and we had a few of them back then, but he gave us so many that we're having round two. So
hint, hint, anybody out there want to send things this way?
Mm-hmm.
You know where to send it.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Today, we'll be talking with Simca Fisher. She is a wife, mother of 10, and author of the book, The Sinner's Guide to Natural Family Planning. We'll be chatting with her about her America article, I Thought Good Catholics Didn't Need Therapy, Then I Went, where she discusses the tension that exists between Catholicism and just discussing mental health issues. Two things that are not very easy for a lot of people to talk about, so...
Yeah, so we actually talked to Simca earlier this morning without Zach, and it was a great discussion. But I want to do a disclosure here. We are not mental health professionals, so we're talking about why people might need or want to see a professional.
And after that, we've got Consolations and Desolations, where we tell you where we did or didn't find God this week.
But first, we have Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to. First, some good news. The relic of St. John Bosco has been recovered. A couple weeks ago, we mentioned that it had been stolen from the church outside of Turin, and it was found in a teapot. A 42-year-old Italian man had stolen it, not because he wanted the brain of John Bosco, but he thought the reliquary that it was in, which was gold-plated, was valuable. But he had not gone around to selling the gold, so thankfully Bosco is safe in his cathedral.
Great. I'm sure Zach Davis will be happy.
Everyone can sleep well knowing that. Next, we have some Pope Francis news. In a recent homily, he told parents to stop pretending to be adolescents and to instead help young people see the blessing of growing into adulthood.
Yeah, when I first saw this story, I was kind of not really interested, but then actually jumping into it and hearing what Pope Francis says, it's super encouraging, especially because he acknowledges that teenagers are at a time where they don't want to be treated like children, but they're also not adults, and that adults themselves actually have to be involved and let them know that, growing older is okay. Youthfulness is not the ultimate sign of success, which I think is really great, because I think, your 20s are going to be great. Your 30s are going to be great. But sometimes teenagers don't think that, and it's great that Pope Francis is emphasizing this message,
Yeah, no, I've actually found that in whatever decade I get into, I'm just oh, they're just teenagers, which is probably not a good thing. We should be maturing a little bit. And I think that is a sign or a part of American culture where we do valorize youth to such a degree that it's now a joke to be adulting. Oh, I just did my laundry. Adulting. And I'm the first one to be guilty of this. I love when my mom does my laundry.
So on to more Pope Francis news and just kind of proving to Zach Davis that the women can handle sports talk, we brought Pope seeks culture of encounter during meeting with NFL legends.
Yeah, so Pope Francis, a known lover of football, took time to meet some people from football's less intelligent stepbrother, American football. Someone gonna challenge me on that one?
Zach, you wanna?
I agree, but...
Okay, I'm good. Moving on. So Pope Francis was very generous and gave a very positive spin on American football, saying that it's a place where we can develop a culture of encounter. I don't know if he's watched football, but these encounters involve concussions. Maybe yeah. Not what we should be encouraging, but, you know, Zach's not here, so I can say that without any pushback.
Well, I kind of agree with Pope Francis. I have friends who played football in college, and they loved it. They loved the solidarity. They loved the fact that they got to meet people from different races, from different cities across the United States. And they loved that it was a physical sport. They felt that it really disciplined them and helped them. You know, we were talking about adulting. A lot of these kids felt that it helped them become better adults, that they wouldn't have been as disciplined as they are now without it.
Oh, I mean, I'm not against sports by any means. I think real football is a beautiful thing.
Wow. Real football.
And I'm just being hyperbolic. I watch football. And
I think I'm going to take up football.
Wait, can Jesuits play football? American football?
Well, we can
football?
Always start a team.
In more serious news out of college, a college student from the University of Michigan wrote an article for America about her father, who's an Iraqi Christian and was just recently detained by immigration officials. He has been in the country since he was 4 years old, but recently the Trump administration has been cracking down on the Chaldean Christian population, many of whom are in Michigan. So her father was actually in court today, Wednesday, June 21st. And the judge kind of put a stay on any action until the 27th. So we're waiting on more news from this. But it's a heartbreaking case. Her dad has been here for a very long time. He did commit a felony offense early on in his time here, but he went to jail, paid for his crime, and since then has raised four kids, started a small business, and was just picked up by ICE officials on a couple Sundays ago as the family was preparing to go to Mass. As a Christian and a person who does, he speaks English, he doesn't speak Arabic. She says her father sending him back to Iraq is basically a death sentence because he would be targeted and would face what she calls genocide, and which the American government has said what ISIS is doing in Iraq is genocide. So to send families back to that situation is unconscionable. So we'll be praying for her family and all the other families facing this.
Absolutely.
On to some other legal news. Jeronimo Janez, the former officer in Minnesota who shot Philando Castile, was acquitted of all charges last week. Last year, on July 16th, he pulled over Castile, who was in a car with his girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds, and Diamond's four-year-old daughter. The reason for pulling him over was that his brake lights were out. So he, you know, and the dash cam footage was released this week as well, after the trial. And if you watch the video, the exchange is really polite. He pulls him over, tells him, your brake lights were out. Do you have your license and registration? And it appears that Philando handed over, and then he says, sir, I have a firearm on me. And then immediately it becomes very tense. And within, I think, seconds or minutes, the officer shoots him seven times. And then from that moment, Diamond Reynolds is live streaming this on Facebook. So we watch as he pretty much he's bleeding to death on Facebook Live. So it's once again sparked the national debate that we've been following for years about police violence and police targeting African-Americans in America. So it's very... Yeah, it's
these videos I find really hard to watch.
Yeah. Do you think, should we watch them?
That's actually a question I started reflecting on early. I was studying in St. Louis during the Ferguson situation, and it was just every night on the news over and over again. We are watching the same things over and over again. And I don't really know the answer to that, Ashley, but there actually, I think, is something a little unhealthy about the repetition of such incidents, that it kind of gets ingrained in in our minds and our, in our consciousness. And there, I think there's a level of that. We kind of get used to it. Like, oh, this is another one of those incidences. So I'll just turn it off because actually I know how this ends, right? I know what happens. That's also not healthy.
Yeah. I think in a way it forces people who don't want to acknowledge that there is an implicit bias that exists in various institutions in this country to kind of see concrete evidence that there is this bias. But at the same time, it is very unhealthy and very traumatic for people of color in this country, especially Black Americans, to constantly see people who look like their fathers, who look like their brothers or their mothers, to just see time and time again these people being murdered on film, on social media, and then there's no conviction. Like, it's taken to trial. We see these acquittals, and I think it wears on them, you know, and it, for them, it is not healthy, you know, and it's a trauma that they have to continue to relive.
And it only reinforces, you know, the ongoing struggle that people of color are facing.
Yeah. And I think it forces not just white Americans to acknowledge that this bias exists, but it also forces other communities of color, because this officer was not, it's not the usual, a white police officer who shot a Black man. It's a Latino police officer who shot this Black man. And you saw how quickly he reacted. And that is a bias that exists within other communities of color. There is an ingrained sense of anti-Blackness that leads many individuals to believe that this guy is inherently dangerous. Archbishop Hebda of Minneapolis St. Paul released a statement this week. "I ask all Catholics and all who will worship with us this weekend to pray in particular for amending of divisions along lines of race, religion, and national origin that all too often find expression in violence, hatred, prejudice, and mistrust." So these words are definitely necessary at this time.
Okay, we are now joined by Simca Fisher. She is a Catholic writer and recently wrote a piece for America titled, "I Thought Good Catholics Didn't Need Therapy, Then I Went." Welcome, Simca.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. So I really love this piece. And I'm wondering if you could just start out by telling us why you had some initial misgivings about therapy and mindfulness.
Yeah, I think it probably went beyond misgivings, unfortunately. I'm 42 years old. I probably could have been seeing a therapist from the time I was maybe 10 years old, and it took me just a few decades. So I think it's something that's pretty common among Catholics. We have this impression, you know, we read so many stories of saints who had terrible trials and struggles that they overcame basically just by praying and going to confession and receiving the sacraments and trusting God. And according to the stories, that's basically all that it took. And I felt, and a lot of people also feel, that that's really all that it should take. And that if you're still struggling in your life, it's because you're spiritually inadequate. And I think people don't even necessarily realize that they feel this way, but it's a very pervasive idea among serious Catholics that God will give us everything that we need. And that if we just focus all of our efforts on spiritual improvement, specifically overtly spiritual improvement, then that's all that we need. And if we look elsewhere, then it's showing a lack of trust in God.
So you mentioned you're 42 now. So at what age exactly did you first start going to therapy?
Goodness, let's see. It's been a little bit over a year.
So I come from a serious Catholic family, and our family had started going to therapy by the time I was 10 as a whole family. It was interesting for me to see that there was this struggle, because it was not a part of my upbringing. So what was it in your life that started to kind of break down this barrier that was in your, that you had set up between being a good Catholic and getting professional help?
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily something that my parents taught me. It's not that they didn't want to help me or anything like that, although that does exist in some families. I mean, I know families where they are actually taught that it would be a betrayal of the family to ask for any kind of help, and you're showing that you don't respect your parents if you go talk to some stranger about what your parents did to you or something. something like that. So there's that too. That was not my family. In my family, and I think it's also sort of a generational thing, because a few decades ago, a lot of people felt that going to therapy was for people who are really, really messed up, that you had to be barely functional, and that, you know, you have to be like a kleptomaniac or have a split personality or hardly be able to get out of bed or something like that before you should resort to seeing a therapist. And I think that's more of a generational thing. Now, it's more common for people to understand that, we have physical therapists. We have specialists in every kind of field of medicine, and we also have people who specialize in helping people with their psychological and emotional difficulties, which everybody experiences at one time or another.
You talk about how Catholics often see mental health struggles as spiritual failures. Where do you think that comes from? Is it rooted in scripture? Is it part of the culture? Where does that come from?
There are some people who try to replace religion with therapy. They try and they think, well, I don't need God. I'm going to love myself, and I'm going to put myself at the center of my concerns. And serving other people and worshiping God and sacrificing myself are all unhealthy behaviors. And what I've learned from my therapist is that I'm the most important person in the world. I mean, I think we've all met people who have learned that lesson from therapy. So it's not completely unreasonable for religious people to be a little bit skeptical of therapy, because a lot of it's really mostly pop psychology that promotes these ideas, these very kind of selfish, shallow ideas. But they're very popular because they're very attractive. You know, you say, well, I'm going to be healthy, and I'm just going to say no to everybody all the time and take care of myself. So you can understand why people who have the crucifix at the center of our lives don't see that it's very Catholic to behave that way, because it's not, you know. So it's an understandable prejudice, but it's not an accurate prejudice, because you know, what I said in my article was that what I learn in therapy is going to be in service of my faith. I mean, that's the basic idea, is that it's not two parts of your life that are warring against each other, but that they're supposed to sort of dovetail with each other.
That's really interesting, because I had a kind of the opposite journey of you, where I started going to therapy and like when I was in 10 with my family, and then all the way through the end of high school. And by the end, it did leave me just feeling kind of like empty, because all my therapist did was affirm me. And at some point, I needed someone to be like, no, Ashley, like, it's not healthy to be chasing boys who don't like you. And so I kind of had this backlash where I was like, I need to go to confession and talk to a priest about this, because I'm not getting the feedback I need. It came from a place of love. I think my therapist might have liked me a little too much, and she was a nice Catholic woman, but kind of became too wrapped up in her role, just protecting my fragile ego, and
that's a real danger. I mean, it's not. I think some people a lot of people are just looking for somebody to listen to them uncritically, and they really enjoy being able to talk about themselves and being, you know, as you said, affirmed in everything that they do, and Catholicism is not going to affirm you in everything that you do. You know, Jesus didn't come to affirm us. He came to die for us. So, I mean, I think that if your therapist isn't challenging you, and if your therapist isn't asking you to look hard at yourself and to answer questions that you don't want to answer, then it's probably not the place for you. Either you don't need to be there at all, or you need to find a different therapist, or you just need to integrate more Catholicism into the way that you approach life, as you said, by going to confession. I mean, it's certainly not a replacement for religion. It's supposed to augment religion. It's supposed to make you whole. What I experienced was trying so very, very hard to be a good Catholic and just white-knuckle my way through it. That, I mean, I was so, when I was in college, I was so depressed. I should have been hospitalized. I was barely functional. And I thought that it was, you know, I thought they were all spiritual problems, and I just needed to be a better Catholic, and then I would feel better. And, you know, you can't pray away chemical imbalances. That's not a thing most of the time. I mean, you know, there's such a thing as miracles, but most of the time, being able to be healed from your depression, or work with your depression at least, and getting past your anxiety or learning how to work with your anxiety are things that make you more capable of spiritual things that you need to do. Like, I mean, you know, like if you're so depressed that you can't get up off the floor, how are you going to get into the confessional?
So in the past year, what has the support been for you from other Catholics or from your own parish? Has that been there for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been overwhelmingly positive. I think the thing that I heard the most from anybody was just, thank you so much for being open about this. I think there was just a big sense of relief that people were willing to come out and say, this is something that's completely legitimate for a Catholic to do, and it doesn't mean that I've suddenly gone off the deep end and I'm not, you know, I'm not becoming a Buddhist or something like that.
God forbid.
Yeah, we ran a survey last month, sort of. We asked our readers if their faith community had done enough to support them while they were experiencing depression and or anxiety. And over 50% of them said that they had not, and they were kind of wishing that their communities had done more and that there had been better outreach by their parishes. So
it's hard because, I mean, our parishes are stretched so thin. I sometimes feel like we expect our parishes to do absolutely everything for us. I think this is something that lay people really need to take over rather than expecting there to be some kind of institutional, I don't know. It probably varies a lot from parish to parish. But I think that if you are a Catholic and you have benefited from therapy, be willing to talk about it with your friends. If you see, you know, a mom who's struggling with postpartum depression or something like that, it's great to bring them a Catholic. And it's great too for if there's, you know, a cry room at church or something like that. But really the main thing that people need is to feel like they're being understood by each other. I think people can be very, very isolated, and especially when they're struggling. I mean, that can really distort your view of reality. So I think that it can be very healing and affirming. Boy, I really want to kick my own butt for saying stuff like that. It's so validating. But feeling like we're not alone is just, there's nothing like it. There's no replacement for that.
So our final question, which we, for all our guests, if you can canonize anyone, Catholic or non-Catholic, living or dead, who would it be?
If I could canonize anyone?
Yes.
That's a good... I would probably have to say my friend Mary Geringer, who is a friend of the family for a long time. And when you come in the room, like, she's just been waiting for you to come into the room. Oh, here you are. That's the impression that she gives you. When you come in, she's couldn't be more delighted to see you and is so glad that you're here and just can't wait to see what you're going to contribute to her life. That's the even when she doesn't say anything, that's just her attitude toward people. And I feel like that's the most Christ-like thing I've ever seen in my life. And that is what it means to be a saint, is to be Christ-like. So she's still alive and probably not listening, so she won't be too embarrassed.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Simca. And where can people find your work?
I have a website. It's at simchafisher.com, SIMCHAFisher.com. And I also write for The Catholic Weekly, which is a diocesan newspaper in Sydney, Australia. And I am the author of The Sinner's Guide to Natural Family Planning, which is available on, it's published from Our Sunday Visitor, and it is on Amazon.
Great. And you can find the article we talked about in this episode at americamagazine.org. Thank you so much, Simca.
Thank you.
Time for some listener feedback. We had a Twitter poll this week asking about Pope Francis's new cross. So usually we ask for adverbs, but we wanted some adjectives or phrases to describe this cross. So just to put it in your minds, it's very simple. There's no corpus on it, as our Jesuit formator would say. It's just like a simple wooden cross with what I think look like some bones on it.
Yeah, it's
it's a little out there. So we asked people to describe this cross. Sarah Neville said young, hip, and lay. Wait, what? Which I appreciated. Archbishop Mark Coleridge, the most fascinating prelate on Twitter, said he's from Brisbane, Australia, and you should follow him. But he said, not quite right, postmodern pastiche, question mark. Nicholas Sawicki, our very own special assistant to the President of America Media, said, money back guaranteed, question mark.
I think the next one is my favorite. Trevor writes, practical, prudential, plebeian.
Yeah, that sounds like Pope Francis.
Yeah.
from Michael O'Loughlin, our national correspondent. Work in progress, question mark. There's a lot of question marks.
I think
people don't know what to think. They don't want to insult Pope Francis.
They don't want to offend Pope Francis, so they're all like, it's ugly? Question mark?
And finally, this I think Barb is actually a fan. She says, simple, sturdy, and unadorned.
That's a perfect Pope Francis description right there. Thank you, Barb. Mm.
All right. Now it's time for Consolations and Desolations, the part of our show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God. All right, Zach, what do you have?
I have a desolation.
Dun, dun, dun.
I was walking back to the Jesuit community a couple nights ago after dinner, and it was relatively later in the evening. And as I was walking back, I was struck by a group of homeless people that were sleeping on the side of the street. And they had this little can out in front of where they were sleeping next to the sidewalk, asking for money and a sign. And I went over to read the sign, and I was going to put some money in the can. But what I was struck by was when I went over to the can and took a look at the people, the sleeping, it was a guy who was visibly my age sleeping with his two daughters who were very, very young. And it was just very jarring for me to see young kids sleeping on the streets, you know, in New York City, right? I mean, in my mind, the greatest city in the world. It's such a rich place in many aspects of its culture. And you have two young children sleeping on the streets. And when I got back to the Jesuit community, I was in my room. I couldn't stop getting that image out of my mind. And then it leaves the question, like, what, where is God in the midst of this wealth, in the midst of this privilege, in the midst of me going back to my very privileged space in my Jesuit community and in my room?
That makes a good transition to my desolation, which is kind of weird. So like I went to the Coney Island Mermaid Parade on Saturday, which is something I've done for the past few years. My sister has done it for the past 7 years. It's just very fun. You dress up like a mermaid or other sea creature and go to Coney Island and march in a parade. And I was like thinking about, okay, like how can I turn this into a consolation?
I'm sorry. No, I can't hold back. I mean, I'm just picturing the mermaids and the dancing. Like, I wish I was there. That's why I'm laughing.
I would love it. And so I was like, okay, like how can I make this a consolation? And then I couldn't. I was like, it was just fun. Like, I can't, like, somehow weave God into this. And then I was thinking about, like, a couple episodes ago, my consolation was this pop-up party in Brooklyn where I was, like, drinking with my friends and Run DMC. And then this weekend I was drinking with mermaids and having so much fun. I was like, I felt, like, guilty and, like, is this really what God wants me to be doing? Like, am I being a good Catholic by, like, dancing on the beach? I don't know. But, and it also, it tied into our conversation with Simca. The article she wrote about going to therapy, there was this one quote in it that really jumped out to me. And she said, "How do you thank God for God's goodness when feeling good makes you feel guilty?" And I was like, yeah.
Wow.
It was in this process of trying to, like, think of a consolation that thinking about what was really a happy weekend was kind of desolating, because I was like, how do I justify having such a great time and such a good privileged life when there are children sleeping on the street of New York?
Yeah, I can have similar experience of that, especially in hanging with friends and having a good time. I mean, I'm not a dancing mermaid, but but this event brought you joy, right? Yeah. But don't let the evil spirit rob you of your joy, right? That somehow the evil spirit comes in and pricks you with this great event that you're having and saying, well, look at all these other people in the world. They're all suffering, which is very true. But still, there's this great gift in your life of joy and dancing. And I guess the spirit even sends us mermaids. It's amazing.
All right. What do you have, Olga?
So this started off as a desolation. During our meeting that we always have before an episode, we were kind of talking this out. And at America, there have been a lot of new faces, a lot of new interns, and also our O'Hare fellows are leaving. So I had a moment in the kitchen either last week or early this week where one of the interns was there and I didn't know her name. And I was just struck by like, oh my God, there are so many new people starting here. And then friendships that I've built, like people are leaving. This includes our producer, Wyatt Massey, who I'm very, very sad about that he's leaving, you know, along with all the other O'Hare fellows, because I felt like I developed these friendships with these people.
No, you can't just give us people for a year and then rip them away.
Exactly. I'm like, why would God do this to me? This is why it's easier to not be nice to anyone and not be open, because it's too hard, you know? But after our interview with Simca, the article, as Ashley was mentioning, she has a lot of fantastic quotes. And one of them is, Christ teaches us that he is present in every living person, but he can be awfully hard to see. So I was thinking to myself, okay, God put these people in my life for a reason, and it's okay that they're leaving. Like, you still built these fantastic bonds, and they will still be a part of your life, because that's what God does, you know?
And that's why Facebook exists.
Exactly.
So Facebook is of God?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that's my consolation to Facebook.
As long as it connects us to Wyatt.
Pretty much.
Who doesn't want to be access to Wyatt?
So yeah, I ended up being consoled after all.
Good. Good place to end.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. We're saying speaking of terrible goodbyes.
There we go. I was shocked to be invited back for a second time. People don't usually invite me back a second time. I mean, they do an interview with me and it's like, yeah, good.
Zach, honestly,
it's been good.
We were desperate. You were the only one who responded to our email. That's really what
I thought
down
that
to.
Might be the way it is. Yes.
You're always welcome
thank
back.
You. Thank you.
All right. Say roll credits.
Roll credits, Ashley.
Jesuitical is brought to you by America Media and produced by Wyatt Massey and Eloise Blondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup, SJ. Adult supervision provided by Carrie Weber. Production help by Anna Marchese. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli. Adverbs by Jake Bernard. You can subscribe to Jesuitical on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show. Send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americamedia.org. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Bye.